Welcome to The Unapologetic. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I have Flex and Preston here with me, as always.
Hey, gay. Are you excited about Pride Month? Well, we have something for you. We have a collection of tons of gay pride attire, tank tops, thongs, jock straps for your endeavors this month. And this month only, because we don't care about the games outside of June.
Oh my gosh.
So run, walk, sashay, strut to your nearest Target and get your prod collection now. I just felt like, thank you, Insane. I just felt like the girls needed to know, okay? They needed to understand how ridiculous it is for a lot of these companies to come out with pride collections only in June when we are gay every day of the year. And we should have attire that caters to our aesthetic every day of the year. So, and it should be more than just rainbow colors. But thank you both. Thank you all for listening to my
hashtag not sponsored anyway. Yes. How long have you been... sponsored by Sashay. How long have you been thinking about that? Or was that
you know, I saw tons of memes about it this month, of course. And so I was like, you know, I'm just going to do my own little ad. And, you know, at the end of the day, we should have unapologetic attire that caters to the gay community in the month of June, just like everyone, like, why not? Let's join the bandwagon.
No. We should have it every single day of the year. And one day we will come out with merch. Absolutely. But yeah.
Because I feel like we're now a queer podcast. I don't know.
We are a queer podcast. We're
definitely
you're right.
A queer podcast at the moment. So. How are you? I mean, I haven't
really. I'm good now. I'm good now that we're doing this. I feel like this is always the highlight of my week. Or a highlight of my week. But yeah, I've just been going through the motions, doing school things, and I feel like I'm traumatized by the rain now, because last time we spoke, my room had just flooded. Last night it rained, and I just hearing the raindrops, I was just like, it was like the middle of the night, and I was just like wide awake, like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen? So that's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
Well, I'm glad that you're no longer flooded, so that's good. I am okay. I came back from my trip that I spoke about in a previous episode. I just came back from Disney World. Overall, I give it a crisp B-.
B-.
It was a B-. It was just too hot. Like, don't go to Disney World in June, July. You will play yourself. I was a sweaty mess the entire trip. So it was just not good. So do it in December, like a normal human being, and don't go in the middle of the summer. And then the food wasn't all that great.
Okay, interesting.
So, you know, but overall, like, the magic was there. You know, you get to see Disney and see it from, like, the lens of, like, how you see it on TV. So it was great. And, you know, I was able to relax. I got a little tan. My goal is always to figure out how to take what I have on and make it ho or fashion. So it's one or the other. And so this trip was how to make it ho. And so
that's fair.
That's what I was doing. So it was cute.
But I also feel like, I don't know, I feel like Florida is a good place to do that. So, yeah.
I mean, we saw a lot of... Trumplicans.
I forgot about that.
You know, it's, you know, Florida, they act like a mask is just something that they've never heard of. And so Disney World did a better job of mandating that you wear a mask, like, when you're at least inside of the buildings. Universal Studios, we went to Harry Potter World, which, of course, I got my life, I got my robes. I am team Ravenclaw. I think I've mentioned that before. Ravenclaw. So I don't know what a Gryffindor is. or a Hufflepuff. I don't know what that is. I don't see her. But at the end of the day, Universal, they just didn't care. So they were like, we don't wear a mask at all. Like, never. So,
wow.
But it was fine. It was fine.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, that was, I don't know, a B minus. That's disappointing. I'm disappointed for you, but that's okay.
It's just lackluster. I would just recommend if you have kids, go. If you're an adult, you should go to experience it. But I definitely don't have to go back is where I am.
Fair. Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
All right. So this week we have three guests with us. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do what we always do, which is a word association. And so basically, do you want to lay it out? I feel like you always do a better job of laying it out.
Sure. So we have our game, word association. One day we're going to come up with a punny title for it. but until we get there, it's our word association game where we play with all of our guests and we ask our guests a random question and we try to get their reaction or their response off the top of the dome. Most people actually, you know, put too much thought into it and then you can see them like thinking. But really and truly, it's just whatever comes to mind. And then we will go into introductions. And so today we have three guests. Two of them you have met before. One is a brand new guest to our podcast who we're very excited to have today. So we'll get started. So I'm going to let the two older guests go first and then let our newest guest go last. So Mona, do you want to start or do you want me to give the first word?
I'll start. Yeah. So the first word is pickles.
That sounds like a spelling bee.
Yes, spell pickles. Use it in a sentence.
Is in elementary school, I got out on the first word of the spelling bee. And I was just like, I don't know.
Well, look at you now.
I still can't spell. That is correct. Thank you for calling that out.
All right, Lita.
All that popped into my mind was ew. I just really hate pickles.
Oh, really? Okay.
Disturbing. When I worked in construction, the guys would just drink straight pickle juice out the jar because I guess it's good for your muscles. And it was gross. I had to walk out the room every time. I can't.
Perfect. And then last, our newest guest, Dr. Cates.
So I'm right in there with Lena. My first thought was gross. I also hate pickles. There's like three things that I cannot stand. And potentially could make me like gag or throw up. And that's pickles, mustard or things vinegary, and tea. So I'm not a very good Southern person.
Wait, you said tea as in like sweet tea?
Yeah. Yep.
What? No, no. I'm always craving because I never get sweet tea in Chicago. So I'm always craving sweet tea every time.
And I've tried regular tea. I've tried unsweet tea. I can sometimes do it if it's like a peach or a raspberry tea, but even then I'm just like, I'll take coffee.
Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, a lot of people say tea tastes like dirt water.
What?
That's what they say. I don't subscribe to that, but that's what the girls say.
I'm offended by that. So like, just a side note, where I'm from in India, Assam, they export over half the world's tea. And so I don't know. I just am offended by that. But anyway, I'm not going to take it personally. All right. Do you want to do the next word?
Sure. The next word is another random word. Flowers. What comes to mind when you think of that? Brianna.
Flowers. Gardening. I mean, I'm drinking out of a mug right now that has tons of flowers on it. So I just get happy when I think of flowers. I love flowers.
Perfect. Okay.
Lena?
I don't know if y'all saw my Instagram post yesterday, but my partner, Clyde, was out mowing his family's land. And when he came back, he had collected all of these random wildflowers that he didn't want to just mow over. So then I spent like way too long trimming them down and putting them in like a crystal vase yesterday. So that's a pop to my mind.
Oh, that's so sweet. Cute. Clyde is always the OG at the romance.
I don't know about always.
No, he does a good job, though. He does good job.
He does. I love him.
And Dr. Kate?
So what initially came to mind is pretty, colorful. I tend to like the very bright, vibrant. If you know me in my personal life, I really love rainbows. Since coming out myself, I've just really embraced the rainbow and like everything I like. I like to show it out there and have it out there. So my husband frequently gets me the brightest color flowers. Just because, so that's what I think of when you say flowers.
Ah, cute.
You guys have such like romantic stories about flowers. Like, oh my goodness.
Preston says the person who like goes to work and has flowers delivered to him there. Like, sorry, I remembered for you.
Mona literally keeps me honest because I will sit here and be like, I never get flowers. No one asks me anything. Oh goodness. Okay. Right. And then our next word.
Raindrops.
Ooh, that makes me think of hurricane season, actually.
Wow. For me, okay.
Southeast. I've got all this water and everything prepared. I've got dog food ready.
Nice.
I think, you know, kind of like you, Mona, when you hear raindrops, you get a little nervous.
Yeah.
I'm in the Southeast right now, so we're all kind of slowly getting prepared for it.
Yeah, that's right. I remember when I lived in Virginia, that was something that like, I felt like storms just followed me because hurricanes followed me to Texas. And then all of a sudden we had a bunch of hurricanes, and then in Virginia too, and then randomly tornadoes. But yeah, separate topic. Lena, what about you?
Isn't there some song that goes drip drop, tip top? I don't know.
Who is that? Migos?
I don't know. Do not listen to me for popular music. I'm terrible at it.
Yeah, that's
top a in my brain. I don't know. I'm not awake yet.
It's funny because you thought a rap song. I literally always think Ariana Grande because she has a song called like Raindrops, or it starts off with raindrops or something. And she always is like, you know, yeah, yeah. And she like likes water. So maybe it's the gay in me. I don't know. But I always think of Ariana.
It's never the wrong time for an Ariana Grande reference.
I agree. And Dr. Kate, what about you?
So I also immediately thought of a song too, but mine was more old school. It was the Raindrops on Roses and Whiskers on Kittens.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Ariana did that, right? She sampled that.
She did. You're right. She did.
Seven Rings.
I was thinking about that too.
we're on the same page. It's fine. It's great.
Okay. We have a line that whoever said money can't solve all your problems must have not had enough money to solve them. Just saying.
Some of the lines were problematic. She also talks about like red bottom shoes being like everything that she likes. I don't know. I can't remember the lyric, but it's kind of problematic. And then there was a rumor that she stole some of those lines from Black women as well. So,
I mean, of course, everyone wants to be Black.
Everybody want to be Black until they have to be Black. And they don't want to be Black. So, and that takes us to our last question, our last word, which is skincare. Brianna, what are your thoughts?
Oh, gosh. So I did actually wash my face today.
That's great. And
I think at some point this month I put on sunscreen. So
that's really great.
That's a cute girl.
That is progress for me. I work with dermatology residents, and I'm still the worst at taking care of my skin. So that's a little bad. But they've convinced me to stop falling asleep out in the sun and to buy sunscreen from time to time. So it's progress.
Wait, I'm confused. What do you mean falling asleep in the sun?
I fall, like if I go to the beach or if I'm outside in the backyard, I just fall asleep outside in the direct sun because it's nice and warm and it's comfortable. That's probably not the best thing for your skin, especially since I don't have a hat on. I don't have any sunscreen on. It's just direct sun, but it's comfortable. It's warm. And after you've had a drink or two, it's easy to do.
You sound so outdoorsy right now. Like
I am very outdoorsy. I love being outside. And I need to probably take better care of my skin.
No, that's great. That's great. What about you, Lita?
I'm going to talk about cocoa butter because I feel like growing up, just the pinnacle of skincare was that super thick, just jar of cocoa butter. And I used to personally hate it because I'm a textures person, and we're already in Texas. And now you want me to add like an inch of cocoa butter to my skin and while I'm sweating. And it wasn't until I got older that I was like, okay, there's lighter creams I can be putting on myself. And like oils and, you know, all these other options I can do to where I'm not miserable. But dang if at the end of the day, if I really need to lock in some moisture, I'm still bathing in cocoa butter and it smells good.
Yeah.
I love me some cocoa butter. Well, I like cocoa butter, the actual cocoa butter. When you said that word, though, it made me think of, you know, those weirdos who are like, hey, let me bring that cocoa butter skin over here. You know, those weirdos that say that. It made me think of that. So it's kind of like, leave me alone. Thank you.
It's about every time I go to, like, get my nails done or something like that, whoever's working will come up and, like, rub my skin and be like, you so soft, how you do that? And I'm like, cocoa butter, but also please stop saying this to me. It's terrifying.
Please stop touching me also. So, Dr. Cates, what about you?
Oh, my initial thought was that I felt red because I don't do anything for skincare. doing something for skincare. My husband's finally been doing some things. He's trying to get rid of some baggy eyes. I've been getting like little breakouts from a lot of stress going on with like work and moving and whatnot, but I still refuse to do anything. If he didn't buy like my shampoo products, I'd probably still be using like a 3-in-1 shampoo, conditioner, body wash.
So we may need to have another episode dedicated to skincare, bring Dr. Cates back so we can talk about some of the things out there.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I mentioned this before, but I am the practice manager for a dermatology clinic. And so all we talk about is skincare. They gave me so many different sunscreens to try for my trip to Disney because I'm allergic to chemical SPF. So I have to use a lot of the mineral ones, and then they aren't always catered to black skin. So I had this whole cast on my body, this white cast looking like a ghost the entire time at Disney World, but I did not burn. So it was nice.
There you go.
You do what you gotta do. But yes, we'll talk more about that. But thank you all for being here today. Mona and I are just so excited to have you guys here and to have this conversation. And so today's topic, before we introduce all of our guests again officially, so today we're talking about what are we talking about? We're talking about like the LGBTQ plus community. I think some of it was about health and wellness in the LGBT community. Some of the challenges that individuals in this community face when it comes to their healthcare.
Being a medical provider within within the medical community, and then also like the lack of training or the training that's available. And so, yeah, kind of like all of that will be kind of the content.
Absolutely. And you guys know that sometimes we go on tangents, but hopefully we'll stay on topic today. But first and foremost, I would like to introduce all of our guests. And again, we're going to start from people who've been here and then let Dr. Cates introduce himself at the very end. So Dr. Brianna Clark, would you like to introduce yourself first?
Hi, I'm Dr. Brianna Clark. I'm a primary care physician who's been working in the Southeast. I see just about all ages. And in my spare time, I run an online platform for Black physicians that are supportive of LGBTQIA providers and patient population. Since that intersection of being Black and queer isn't well explored, especially in the professional world when you're looking at doctoral candidates for medicine, veterinary medicine, and pharmacy. And I'm Lena's sister.
That's perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Clark, or Brianna, who we will refer to as Brianna or Bree throughout the day. Then that takes us to Miss Lena Clark.
Hello, I'm Lena. I am not a doctor because I get really annoyed if I have to stare at a textbook for too long. But fun fact, it's actually because my brain is busy thinking about the better way to write the textbook. So I'm a systems researcher. I also do instructional design. And yeah, Bree's my sister. Mona and Preston are the lifeline that got me through grad school. And I'm hoping that our third mystery guest will be a new friend.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lena. And then that brings us to our newest guest, Dr. Chase Cates.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Dr. Chase Cates. Please feel free to call me Chase for the rest of today. I grew up in Dallas. So I'm born in Texas, spent my first 18, 19 years there. I went to undergraduate school at Angelo State University, way out in West Texas. So you can imagine the discrimination people faced out there. I mean, racism is still present, let alone homophobia. Mm-hmm. I then went to College Station to get my master's in public health. From there, I then spent a good chunk of time outside of Texas for all of my medical training. And I feel like that's where I got to explore myself, kind of getting out of that Southern culture and oppression a little bit. And so my first 2 years of medical school were right outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. That second year is when I finally came out to myself as gay and finally got to kind of explore who I am and develop that way. My second 2 years were in Western New York, out in Elmira. Not a whole lot going out there. I cannot stand the cold. I will refuse to go back to any states that have snow for months at a time. And then after that, so I had a little difficulty getting residency. I initially tried going into emergency care, but I could not get a spot. So I did my backup in internal medicine, and I ended up being placed in Searcy, Arkansas. So that shoved me way back down into the closet again. Luckily, I'd already met my now husband, but we can explore that whole aspect later on in this podcast. So I did my 3 years in internal medicine there. During there, I kind of firsthand saw discrimination both against patients and against myself, which really got me into the LGBTQ health field, just wanting to make a difference. Except I had no idea how. I knew things needed to change, but there was no training in residency. There was no training in medical school about what our community needs, what you need to do in order to improve it, and how to do it. So as much as I wanted to make a difference, I had no idea how. So anything I did was more self-taught. And right when I was trying to find a job, I was going to come down to San Antonio and do hospital work. As I literally paid for my license, my program director knew how passionate I was about making improvements. And there was a new fellowship that just opened out in Los Angeles that was an LGBTQ healthcare and HIV fellowship. By that point, I was already tired. I was so tired. I didn't want any more training. I wanted to get out. And I immediately said, no, I don't want to do it. I'm done. And then I looked at it again. I showed my husband and he's like, well, it's literally everything you've been talking about. And it's only 1 year. I had already said, I'm not doing three more years. Two was a gray zone. One was a maybe, and it was a one. So I was like, yeah. And it did pay better than regular fellowship. And it was in Los Angeles, California, so much better than Searcy, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? Fine. I'll apply to this one fellowship. And if I don't get it, then we'll keep doing what the plan is. And I was very fortunate to be the very first inaugural fellow to be accepted to this fellowship. So we up and moved to Los Angeles, California, where I got to do basically being taught primary care for the LGBTQ population, being taught how to manage HIV, how to treat hepatitis C and B, and how to do PrEP. and just be more affirming in general. And then one of the big aspects of the training was transgender care, because there was absolutely zero training whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm one of the major providers here in San Antonio doing that. Thankfully, because I got that training in Los Angeles. And even with COVID happening, because I was there right in the middle of COVID. So my second half of training was kind of interrupted by that, but I was still able to finish my training. And from there, I think I had enough of Los Angeles. It was too expensive and very, very, very trafficky.
Mm-hmm.
I brought everything back to San Antonio, and I'm now here in San Antonio at Alamo Area Resource Center, providing everything that I was taught. So primary care, HIV care, transgender care, doing everything out here.
Wow.
Wow. I mean,
that is an extensive resume, Chase. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for being here today and joining us for this conversation. I think by the time this goes live, I think it will be after June. So Pride Month, you know, I would love for this to go up and, you know, during Pride Month, but we probably won't be able to do that. But I think but
also, I just want to, sorry, I want to interject and just say on this podcast, every month is Pride Month. So
and that's true. I don't know if we recorded that. I don't know, because we said it earlier, but I don't know if it made the recording. But it literally is Pride Month every single day. And so again, this conversation is going to be timely regardless. There's going to be someone who needs this information. And so we're so excited to have you all here mm-hmm. to chime in on this. And so I guess to get things started, a lot of the things that you all have mentioned, whether that was today or in a previous podcast, is about how your identity has shaped your trajectory in your careers. And I guess I would like to hear a little bit more about that from each of you, especially you, Chase, and because you mentioned, you know, it was kind of a journey from being the person that you are today, in order to be the person that you are today. So do you all want to kind of share your thoughts on your identity and your career? Let's mix it up. Lena, do you want to go first?
Okay, so when you say identity, do you want me to focus on, I guess, which part of my identity, or do you mean the culmination of my identity?
I think you should you should answer the question based on what feels natural to you when it comes to your identity. So if that is the intersectionality of your identities, then absolutely, whatever okay. you want.
I think I wouldn't be a true sociologist if I didn't focus on my intersectionality. So, mm-hmm. I think that's what I'll go with. You know, I've always known that I was a weird cookie in the room. I'm usually dressed the loudest. My hair glows in the dark sometimes. I'm clearly not afraid to speak my mind in a tense situation, things of that nature, which does not always work out for me, but it usually works out well for, you know, whoever that other person is that I'm trying to protect. So that's why I keep doing that. And so I realized pretty early on that, especially from a career, I needed that freedom to be allowed to speak out and, you know, do whatever it was that my moral compass was going for. And I needed that freedom to express myself as well. I'm not going to lie and say that that's always been easy or come very natural to me, because there's aspects of my, you know, especially my personal life that I'm still going to keep very under wraps. Not even at this point for fear of what others will think, but just to make sure I'm always protecting my energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that something I've been blessed with over the last few years, you know, when I left, I've been honest about this. College Station, though I got to do a lot of amazing things and meet a lot of amazing people, I experienced a level of racism and sexism that just to have it happen, boom, 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 one right after the other, it tore me down. It made me question myself. And so by the time I made it to the next phase of my career, I was so just scared of how to present myself, how to be my truest self. But then I met another Black woman that just strolled into the very spaces that I was kind of scared to exist in and was like, no, y'all came after me. You needed me for a reason. This is who I am from A to Z. You're going to take all of this or you get none of me. And so when I think about the intersectionality of my identity, I think about the constant retooling that happened in the younger part of my life to find that balance of how do I have that full career? How do I have all the friends? How do I have all the experiences? And how do I be authentic? And I'd be lying if I say that I'm at a complete place of balance with all of it. But I would like to think that I'm uniquely situated to use all of my Black girl magic to help other people that are in the same headspace as me right now.
So. That's an amazing answer.
Yeah, amazing. Love it.
Black girl magic. What about you, Brianna?
So I'm a medical resident, and sometimes that feels like all I am, but which means I graduated from medical school and now I'm doing postdoctoral work. And on paper, if ACGME is listening, I only work 80 hours a week, but I work way more hours than that, taking care of any type of problem. In the real world, I'm a Black female, bisexual, disability of hearing loss and PTSD. A lot of that sourcing from working in the medical field with different things that have happened. So there are a lot of different aspects of me. And for the longest, I just kind of coped with it. I've lived in the Southeast for years. I went to Texas A&M. I actually met Chase there, and we went on a public health, I think, conference together to DC years ago. It feels like so long ago. And of course, Lena followed me to Texas A&M afterwards. So very much learned how to just kind of fit in that space. And for me, some of the changing point happened when I was watching other rising students really struggle with who they are and how people were treating them. I went to a medical graduation a few years ago. So when medical students graduate, it's a big party, big formal celebration. And one of the gay male students was walking across the stage, and the dean thought it appropriate to misgender him at the very first time he was going to be called doctor. Mm-hmm. So that kind of just like it outraged me. And then there was another point, and I don't know if Chase remembers this, when we went to that public health conference in DC, they were talking about marriage equality and people were cheering and happy and everything at the conference. And I heard somebody sitting next to me say, "Ew," and that's disgusting. And that just kind of stuck with me. Often I feel like as being kind of a primary care provider that I'm not at the upper echelons of medicine. I'm not doing the complicated surgeries. I'm not at the big university. But I feel like my point of change is to be able to start speaking up and doing what's right to push those students to be their best. So I hope that I'm never at another graduation where I hear a medical doctor get misgendered. I hope that I'm never in a situation where I'm hearing a healthcare professional say "ew" when we're talking about marriage equality and trying to create that change. So what I did is I created an online platform for Black medical professionals. There are veterinarians, pharmacy and medical students and medical doctors to learn more about LGBTQIA issues and to be supportive of those coming up in those fields, those training those fields, and how to create space for those patient populations and their group. Because I just felt like we have to do something. We had to speak up. And even though I'm more of a bookworm, I'm more of an outdoors person, spending time alone in the backyard, falling asleep in the sun, I feel like this is my point where I really have to do something. Part of it was my religious beliefs. As a Christian, I felt like it was morally right to stand up and support everybody in my community and do the right thing. And then I think just as a human being to find that connection and say, "You belong here," was a big point for me. So yeah, that's kind of who I am.
thank you so much for sharing that and for all of the work that you're doing in order to support some of these medical professionals. I know in my career, especially being in the hospital and working in healthcare, diversity, inclusion, equity, these are all buzzwords that are happening right now, where when in actuality, these have been huge issues for the healthcare industry for forever, where it's usually a white, cis male dominated field. And so for people of color, people who represent the LGBTQ plus community to see themselves in some of these positions of leadership, it's very important, especially when you're a physician, because you inherently are a leader just due to the nature of your role. So thank you for that. That's amazing.
Yeah, we need everybody out there in the field working, and we have to push diversity forward. It's more than just creating some policy that's going to sit in a policy notebook, or having a one day Black History, one day LGBTQIA Day. It needs to be expansive and across the board, where we're really seeing diversity push to the top levels and making those decisions.
I mean, it should be integrated into the fabric of your mission and your vision and your values of the institution. And institutions that have not figured that out yet, I feel sorry for them and their employees, because it's very
preach.
Important.
Preach, Preston, preach.
But let me get off my soapbox, because all I did last year was physician engagement. And so taking care of you guys was my job, and thinking about the wellness and the burnout rates and things that you guys have to go through. I mean, it's a lot. So again, thank you for all of the work that you're doing. It is always beneficial and it always has an impact. So then that brings us to Chase and kind of your thoughts on your identity, the intersectionalities, and how that has played a role in your career.
Absolutely. So first, Bree, I promise medicine gets so much better after residency. Residency just sucks right now, but you'll get there, I promise. I feel like I came out later just because of, you know, growing up in the South, I've always been oppressed. And there's always something, whether like an offhanded comment that someone said or something I witnessed, that just kind of, as I was like inching closer to the surface, just brought me right back down. So I didn't actually come out until I was around 27 or so. It was my second year of medical school. I was about halfway through. And that's when I finally came out. And then those next 3 years or two and a half was kind of me exploring myself and figuring out what walls that I put up to blend in, to fit in as a straight white male, and which parts like were me and which parts were not me. And so I'm still figuring that out today. I feel like my pride goes every day, to the point now where if I'm wearing just casual t-shirts, it's always something gay related of some sort.
That's amazing.
Like all of them are that. I don't wear like plain t-shirts. It's either that or like just a polo or something more professional. But whenever I ended up, I remember one time towards the end of medical school, we had to do a mandatory session back at the main campus, and it was case scenarios. I don't even remember what the general topic was, but one of them came up with a gay patient coming in for some concern. I don't even remember what it is. But the preceptor we had in there said, was just trying to start a discussion and asked like, what do you do when a patient has an alternative lifestyle that you don't agree with? And that kind of took me aback. Like, I had just spent the like last 2 years really accepting myself and learning to move forward. And I felt like at that time I should have said something, but I've also felt like that oppression I still felt in the South was sticking in there, and I felt almost afraid. But what brought some optimism is that literally everyone else in the room, all the other students, spoke up. And they're just like, it's not an alternative lifestyle, it's who they are, and just really defended the community as a whole. No one even knew me. I mean, so this wasn't directly a defense against me, but that really made me feel better and more confident about myself until we got to Arkansas. And then Arkansas, so whenever I found out, I ended up there, I was scared because Arkansas is not a protected state. So you can be fired for simply being gay. And I was worried about that. And so I'd already met my, he's my boyfriend at the time, but my husband now. So I wasn't afraid of that aspect, but going down there, I felt a little better because it's a nonprofit organization. It falls under federal guidelines. And believe at that time, Obama had in the statements that you can't fire for sexual orientation. But that didn't mean that an attendee can't give me a bad grade. And then they can fire me for getting bad grades. So I still had to be careful. At that time, I basically adopted a don't ask, don't tell policy for myself. You know, I just wanted to do my job. I didn't want any favoritism. I didn't want any negativity for who I am. I just wanted to get through residency and survive. Mm-hmm. It was towards the end of that first year. It was somewhat working. The only time I lied was with my surgery resident or surgery rotation. The very first time I met this surgeon, he was like, I grew up conservative. I'm extremely conservative. I'm not going to apologize for that. I didn't even say my name yet. He just said that. And I was like, well, I'm not coming out. Right. So the whole month I played pronoun games because he would always ask me about who I'm dating. People in Arkansas are very nosy. So it's one of the first few questions is, are you single? Are you taken? Are you married? Like, what's going on? And so I would always play the pronoun game with either saying bae or just not say a pronoun. So if he said, what does your girlfriend do? And I just say, works for so-and-so company. You know, I wouldn't say a pronoun. That was a little hard for a month. I was afraid I was going to accidentally say his name. And then I had to think of a female name that would be a good nickname for that, which doesn't exactly work for Josh.
JJ. No.
The one I had planned for was Joshlyn. Like, oh, it's just short for
Josh. Oh, Josh. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Luckily, it never happened. But it was a few months after.
You have to go through.
Yeah, you know, I was doing my hospital rotation, and we had a PA student that was training with us. I had just gotten engaged, so we're kind of talking about the wedding plans and whatnot. Religion never came up at all. Searcy, Arkansas is very Church of Christ, just for a background there. But we got along great. The month went great. At the end of the month, she gave us all a thank you card. My card said, dear Dr. Cates, thank you for teaching blah, blah, blah. I don't remember what the actual meat of the card said. All I remember is the last sentence, and it said, P.S., I hope you find God. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, like this whole month, we got along great. I thought we were friends, and you determine my religion based on my sexuality.
Right.
And at that point, I was just like, this is BS. I don't know if I can curse on you.
No, you can.
Okay.
We curse every day.
We curse every day.
I was just like, this is bullshit. I was just like, this, enough is enough. And I was like, I'm tired of hiding. Nothing's going to change if I'm silent. So from that point forward, I made sure I pulled out my pride shoes. My very first set of pride shoes were the Adidas ones. It looked like they had paint splattered on them.
Mm.
And I wore that everywhere. I was like, I'm going to wear these everywhere I go. And then anytime I was in charge of giving a lecture, it was something LGBTQ related. So I taught about PrEP. I taught about suicide rates in the community. I taught about the history of HIV. There were times that they had me do like board review. And so I can't make that LGBT related, but I can throw drag queens on every single PowerPoint slide, which mm-hmm. I did. mm-hmm. I did everything so that I was very unabashedly myself and made sure that you realize I am here. I am not going anywhere. This is normal. Deal with it. And although the residents and the attendings, everyone was great. I got some discrimination from nurses, from other outside staff. There's one nurse in particular, 3 North, that she made it very clear she does not agree with my lifestyle. But we could do work together. And whenever I was leaving, I was just saying bye to like all my favorite nurses and whatnot. And she was like, oh, where are you going? She started the conversation, and I said, oh, I'm doing LGBTQ healthcare and HIV fellowship in Los Angeles. Immediately she shut down, turned, looked at her computer, wouldn't talk to me, didn't say anything at all. The other nurses turned around and were like, oh, I love Los Angeles. Oh, that's so exciting. You're going to do so good. And I'm just like, yeah. And I made sure I sat there and talked with him about it in front of her for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Her
love sit. It. Yes.
Started. I witnessed other aspects from patients. So when I was an intern, I got a call to admit a transgender woman to the floor. I think it was just for some basic chest pain observation. But after the rundown, the ER attending said, "Oh, by the way, he looks like a woman. He says he's a woman, but he's not." And I was just like, all I could do is, I'm a lowly intern resident. He's the attending physician. And I have no power. I'm the bottom of the totem pole. All I have to say, okay, and go down there and do the best I can to be affirming. I made sure I asked what her preferred name is, made sure I understood the relationship of everything that's going on. Her story was quite sad. She has a child and the mom would not let her see it until she transitions back. There's also another trans woman that had to go physician to physician begging to be seen so that she can get her hormones, and no one would take her in until we finally got one physician that was just like, "What's the big deal? Yeah, come on in." It was a lot of that I'm just like, this is absurd and something needs to change. So that's where I got my passion from. And I'm still exploring it now, like I said, and every day I feel like I find something else within the queer community that I feel like is part of me or that I love or that I am embracing, that maybe before I was just like, no, I that's not okay. Or I don't feel comfortable with that. To the point where when I came out here, one of the big advertising things we did to get me out in the community was we had a local drag queen put me in drag while interviewing me. And so I got out here, and this was at work, and we got to advertise work, and I became Dr. Kiki Waters, threatening my stuff and drag. And I was,
yes,
full rounded picture of my development.
That is absolutely amazing. I honestly, I think what's really impactful for me is just hearing how your own personal journey has kind of aided you in being this advocate and this this physician and this professional that caters to the LGBTQ plus community. And you do it so gracefully, and that's amazing. And I'm so happy to hear that you finally got to a place where you were very, where you felt like you were you. And I think it's interesting because typically a lot of queer people have that moment where they're like, I'm coming out, or this is what I'm going to do in order to walk in my truth. And it looks different for every single person, just kind of how you gravitated towards all of the pride colors and you put that into everything that you do. I think for me, I was like, I'm going to paint my nails and I'm going to be this like masculine, feminine, androgynous like thing. But like my fiance, he's very different and he did something very different, which, you know, he and I have varying opinions about, but he was out here in these streets. That's what he was doing. So we all have a different journey. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And I kind of want to like talk about this power dynamic that you mentioned about with your attending, right? Like what did that feel like? Because I'm trying to like put myself in that position of like being told this, like, it's gross messaging to me on some level, and like then having to feeling like you can't speak up. Like what was that like? Just, you know, like
it defeating, I guess. I'm literally just an intern, so I'm the very first year resident. No say, no power, really. Anything I do, like any orders, basically have to go through other people to make sure I'm doing it correctly. This is an attending, so he's in there, he's employed by the hospital. I mean, he's got all the say. On a separate note, the ER physicians are very like powerful within the hospital itself. So if I said anything like against him, that's going to come back to my attending, and I'm already afraid that I'm going to potentially lose my job just for being gay and get a bad grade or anything like that. So, I mean, I basically felt like I had to just sit back and take it. And in this case, it wasn't even against me myself. It was against another patient, but I felt like I could not say anything. Not that I didn't want to, I felt like I couldn't, or would risk my own position and my own, future essentially. Cause if I get kicked out of residency, that's going to make it so much harder to get any residency, which if I can't get any residency, I can't work as a physician.
Right.
Yeah. And like, even from a research standpoint, something that that just made me think of is that I feel like just the underlying tones of that, of having to like do what you need to do in order to survive and, you know, protect yourself. That's a really common thing that people in the LGBTQIA community go through, in general, just in life, just mm-hmm. for existing or being alive. And so, I don't know, that it's just, it's unfortunate. And so, again, to our listeners, I feel like our listeners are people who are not the problem, but
yes.
Yeah. So it's just like not even worth saying, but like, I mean, these are things to pay attention to, because like those power dynamics shouldn't exist. Like, it shouldn't be like that. I mean, you know, I don't know. It's just gross to me that that even exists.
Brianna, Lena, have you guys? Yeah, perfect.
I've experienced it a lot. So since I mainly work in rural environments, there's this idea that queer people only exist in places like LA, New York, and maybe Atlanta. They exist everywhere. Even in the most hillbilly backwater places that you can imagine, deep in East Texas, Louisiana, middle of nowhere, North Carolina, they're everywhere. And I've had a lot of issues with, in the community, it's called trans broken arm syndrome, where whatever this trans person is coming in for, it must be related to them being trans. It couldn't be another issue. So patient comes in with a broken arm, it's related to the hormones and it couldn't be anything else, or it's because they're trans. And you get into a very dangerous situation with that, because anybody can have a heart attack. Anybody can be pushed off a ladder and break their arm. Anybody can have a metabolic disorder that causes them to have very brittle bones. But if you kind of narrow in and focus on, oh, it must be because they're trans, you're never going to explore those other issues. So doing chart reviews, and part of our job as an upper level resident is to go through and look at your intern's charts. You'll notice that they'll just focus in and like, oh, it's because they're trans. That's why they're here. They just need to stop hormones and then they can leave. So trying to find ways to speak up about that and expand people's views, it's been tough. And it's hard to talk to the upper echelons, the higher level archy, and say, we need to go back and reorganize this. And I think that's where, as public health professionals, most of us go into management level positions. And that's our point of change, that we don't do a lot of direct interaction with patients. We look at populations. So finding ways to educate the people that are working directly with patients, that are on the ground level, on how to re-examine how we're thinking about patient care and interaction. How are your residents doing their sign out from resident to resident? So with every shift change, we sit down and we talk about all the patients and say, this is what's going on. Are we using the appropriate pronouns when we're talking about these patients? Because that's important. It shows respect. If we'll respect somebody when they're not sitting in the room next to us, then we're more likely to respect them when they are sitting in front of us. And that's kind of that real changing point on the public health side of things, that we're really pushing those policies out. Preston, I think you're 100% right. The problem isn't the people that are listening to the podcast. It's those that refuse to listen to the podcast and say, I'm going to stay in my own way. But for those that are listening to the podcast, they have that point to make change, saying we're going to have a training session on this. We're going to start implementing policies to teach people that say, you know, whether you like dressing up in a business suit to come to work or not, you're going to do it. And whether you like respecting patients' pronouns or not, guess what you're going to do during work hours to start pushing that change.
What are the challenges or even the successes that you've experienced? And this is for both, or all three of you, really, when it comes to advocating for some of these vulnerable populations. Because to me, and this is kind of in the very beginning of my journey of doing DEI work, it was always my question was like, well, we can make all of these changes internal to our institution, but we're trying to fix something like racism. We're trying to fix something like homophobia, which is something that extends far beyond the walls of our institution. And one of my mentors was like, well, the hope is that what we do here within these walls will then trickle out and go into the communities, and they'll be able to spread some of that knowledge and that awareness that they've learned here to other people in their communities. But in my heart, soul, mind, body, and spirit, it's a very taxing and very hard journey to go on. And so what have you seen when it comes to advocating, having these conversations, dealing with people who may be a lot more narrow-minded? And then how have you seen successes or challenges when it comes to that?
Hey, everyone. Seems like we've been doing a lot of two-part episodes recently, but the conversation's just been so rich, and these are the kind of conversations that I personally really love, and so I feel incredibly grateful to be included in on these dialogues. Lena and Dr. Clark, they connected us to Dr. Cates to set this episode up. So thank you so much to Lena and Bree, and also thank you to Dr. Cates or Chase for coming on and, you know, talking to us about, you know, all the work that he's done, his journey. Hearing some of these anecdotes that Dr. Cates and Dr. Clark mentioned are just wild. When we were recording, I definitely was pushing down a lot of emotion, and even while editing, it's just so heartbreaking. That people feel okay treating another human being like that, or invalidating, you know, their identity or who they are. And I also just feel really sad for the individual that they even have to experience that or go through it. It's, I don't know, there's just no place for that, in my opinion. And that's the opinion that everyone should have, period. You know, in med school, one of the first things that students do is the white coat ceremony, which kind of symbolizes entering into clinical practice. And so, you know, every doctor takes the Hippocratic Oath, where they promise to do no harm. And even in public health, we have similar principles. The Belmont Report, for example, or which is the core of all of this. And so this episode kind of highlights the fact that there are doctors out there who don't take this oath seriously, or they're taking it onto themselves to pick and choose when to honor it based off of a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. And, you know, I'm sure this, you know, stretches across to race even. Prejudice has no place in healthcare. And, you know, as we've always said, we know our audience isn't the problem. We know that all of you are the people who are out there doing the work, doing good work, and, you know, making the world a better place for everyone. And so, you know, all I can say is keep doing what you're doing. You know, equity, inclusivity, and diversity. Always. But I'm going to get off my soapbox for now. Come back next week for part two. Thank you all for your continued support. Follow us at Unanthropologetic Podcast on Instagram. Leave us a comment, rate, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us on. We love you. We see you. Until next time, take care.